This is from the new collections, St. Peter and the Goldfinch. And this is a poem titled "He of the Long Wait." Every morning, he invited the wind into his open window. Then he would lean out and, believing the trees were listening, would whisper, "Welcome back." He wanted the weeds to nod, for the birds to carry his breathing to their nests. In the afternoon, he sat in the theater of sparrows, juncos, nuthatches, under the loft and languid passing of clouds, and imagined applauding the man two doors down who walked by with his three dogs. He loved the ubiquity of time. In his basement, he had a puppet stage, painted pale blue with a crimson curtain, where each night the puppets, a rabbit in a beret, a mole with a walking stick, a man with a beard full of nettles, and a woman holding a golden basket of pears, talked about their day. Then he went to sleep, the sky deepening behind the ceiling of stars.
As beautiful as ever.
Thank you.
Can you describe this collection for us, Jack?
Well, yes and no. Of course, you know, anybody who writes something says they have no idea what they wrote. But as I looked over previous books, I recognized that age has something to do with each one. I think they depict a person at a certain age. And as I'm 75, most of these poems share kind of walking around and reflecting, observing something and noticing what your mind does with it, and less trying to come up with an idea or scratching your head, and less trying to, say, describe something, less autobiographical in the sense of events. And any poem's autobiographical, but this is sort of a, you know, what's in the mind, what kinds of things just show up when you're at this age that, as I look, wouldn't have shown up earlier. Yeah. And that's the best I could say. They're almost all more reflective than assertive, you know, if that makes any sense.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
Very assertive.
Were some of the poems written some time back, or are they a pretty fresh collection of recent works?
Actually, they're almost all recent. Recent meaning it takes about 2 years for them to go through the publishing process.
Of course, yeah.
So recent would be about 2 years ago. And then we decided to have maybe a half dozen or so poems from a couple early, way early, first two collections that the editors just really liked and thought those books are nowhere to be found. Mm. And there's a couple poems in there that they seem to fit really well. And let's reprint them back in here.
You have a poem in there that I think will warm the hearts of Kalamazooans about your coffee talks with Con Hilberry.
Right.
Kalamazoo continues to grieve for him. He was such a poetic icon for us, and he gets a tribute in your book.
Yeah. When I came here, he became Uncle Con, especially to our daughter. Our daughter's the same age as Conrad's daughter that was killed on the train. And Con and Marion really took Meredith in and followed her. Meredith's an artist. She's done the covers of all the books, which is a joy for a dad. And then Con really was, at that early age in 71, 72, when I came, he was my dad. He was my poetry dad.
Yeah.
I needed that, you know, and I was amazed. I didn't ask. It didn't happen. We met. They met our daughter, fell in love with her. His sensibility was something that I would hope to carry.
You know, I think in many ways you do, Jack. You've taught for, 37 years at Hope College? I believe you do writing workshops still?
Right on. And one-on-one times in the house, which is a real joy.
Wow.
Just to have somebody come in and work together for about an hour and a half.
Mm.
That's a remarkable joy. And then, of course, becoming retired, People say, do you miss your students? And I say, yes, for 40 years, I miss my students. They all leave. But the teaching has continued, and it's changed in a marvelous way, because 18 to 22-year-olds are writing poems about the lousy weekend they had, and all of a sudden, here are these wonderful souls with full lives lived. And so the material became completely different to work with, as were the people. Their aspirations weren't trying to get anywhere. Their aspiration was only to write the poem about, you know, grandpa, whatever it was.
Yeah.
That's been a real joy, a value. Boy, lucky me.
You were at the beginnings of a visiting writing series at Hope College. I wondered if you could talk to, and you have already in part, talk about the importance of young writers connecting with more experienced writers. We often think of writing as something we do in a vacuum, but I think you've illustrated how important it is to make that connection.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that. That goes back to, there's a charming, in a way, story about that. The department had a lot of students wanting to have a creative writing minor, and I kept voting against it. And the reason was, I said, we can't do that until we set up some way for these wonderfully talented students to be discovered. You know, you're sending your resume out from little old Hope College to the Iowa Writers Workshop. Well, come on, you know, they've never heard of it. So setting up that writer series, I set it up so that we would bring prominent writers who were in teaching in MFA programs. And they would come here and they'd go, these students are remarkable. I mean, they're just remarkable. And so I voted yes for the creative writing minor, because exactly what you said. And the other thing is, they would stay in our house, sleep in our daughter's bed, and I made a film called They're Just Like Us, because I would, you know, back in those days it was video. Mm-hmm. So I would show that to my students. Here comes William Stafford down the stairs in his pajamas, you know. and that was so important for them to discover, these are people and you can do what they do, you know, drop your awe and learn from them and have a life with them. And so by now there's 85 of them have MFAs, 90 some of them are published nationally. I take no credit except for doing the right thing for them, you know.
It's part of your legacy, Jack. It is.
Well, thank you. It's certainly one that I get teary about. I really feel, as I look back, that was the right move. And those students, of course, they've stayed in touch. So that's another joy, too. You know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
When did you first realize that poetry is a path you want to take? When I dug around a little bit, it seems at some point you wanted to be a baseball player, and you come from sports roots
in
Pennsylvania. Right. And then at the point where you started college, there were some four majors in there.
Oh, yes. Oh, you saw that. Yeah.
Trying to find your path.
It sounds like a quite intelligent person, when really what lies behind that is one confused kid searching for something.
Aren't we all when we're kids?
And what helped was to discover, wait a minute, I'm none of these. These all feed me. There was no creative writing back then. There was nothing. So there was no way to discover that's what I would really be. So there were the four majors, and coming out of the sports world, and it was a big time sports world. My dad was the coach at the University of Pittsburgh in basketball. And I started writing songs. I was going to kick Paul Simon right off the charts. And I was writing songs for the poet Lee Young Lee's sister. And then we were doing pretty well. And then she got married and came to rehearsal one day and said she's going to sing only for her children now. Well, that just sent the whole thing, you know, exploded. And I didn't want to go through all the music again. So I had the marvelously naive idea that since I wrote song lyrics, well, you just get a piece of paper and write a poem. I showed these poems to the poet Paul Zimmer in Pittsburgh, and he looked at five of them and he set them aside and he said, I'll be glad to help you. We're going to have to start over. And so I worked with him for 3 years, really learning it. But it was the transition naively from writing song lyrics to poems. But But yeah, I was, the other thing you mentioned is the sports. And for a while, I was always very shy about the poets' stuff because of the athletic background. I'd say, you know, I write poems, but I also play ball.
A little chest thumping there.
That's right. No, yeah. I'm not as effete as you might presume.
How did you end up from Pennsylvania ending up in this part of Michigan?
That was very strange. I was working in the admissions office at the University of Pittsburgh. I'd redesigned their brochures, their applicants jump, because at that time, the university in the late 60s was apologizing for being a city school. And I said, I think you ought to change that and say that's the attraction for coming at that time. Come to the city. You know, if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere. And that zoomed their applicants. I had never heard of Hope College. They heard of what I did there through a former teacher that I had and who had moved to Hope. So they got a call inviting me to be the admissions director. And I said, I'd do that if I could have faculty status. And they said, no, you can't have faculty status. And I said, well, OK, then I'm not going to come. But if you ever need somebody to work with writing students, I'd be happy to show up. Well, a couple months went by and phone rang and they invited me up for an interview. And the department divided, six against, six for me. There were 12 tenures. And the dean said yes to them. We'll give them a shot. And here I still sit.
That went right.
Yeah. Yeah, that did. So it's all fortuitous, you know.
I didn't have
much assertion in much of anything I do. Yeah.
Well, you knew what you wanted and you asked for it and you got it. So, there's something to be said for that.
Yeah,
When you're teaching poetry, whether it's one-on-one or these writing workshops, what's that important lesson that poets, writers need to know? What makes a great poem?
For me, the two things that I always attended to were, one, let's find your world. Let's really find your world. And that's, you think that's easy. You think you're already in it, but you probably aren't, especially with the young students. But even now, find the one that's really the one that you live in. So that was helpful for them to find a vision. And then after that, I said, look, this is an art and there are techniques. This isn't, you know, a dream world where you poetry is nothing more than expressing yourself. It's applying the art to what you're expressing. Mm-hmm. So my job is to teach you. I had a list of something like 64, we'll call them techniques. I'm not fond of that word, but techniques, let's say, that you can apply to what you want to create. And it's my job to give you those. And then you can have fun working with them. You don't have to obey them. You just see what they do with what you want to compose. And I had so many students who just wanted more, 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 because most of the students who came to Hope had an idea about poetry, which really wasn't actual. So I was lucky. I never had a prima donna who said, you know, don't teach me anything. This is what I want to do. I always had students who said, tell me more. Tell me more about line breaks. You know, I would always tell them. Smile and say, do you know there are 14 ways to break a line? And they'd say, what? And I, there are actually 14 different ways
really?
To break.
Really? I didn't know that either. Wow.
Yeah, it's just such a fun thing to learn. And then you don't have to memorize it, of course, but then you think, well, right here, I could break the line in order to create an anticipation of the next line. It was like that. So there are 14 of those. And it was that kind of thing with that kind of student that they just, They ate it up. They wanted more, more, more. And so they could do more with, you know, the poem about their grandmother and the day she lost her husband or whatever it was that they were writing. They came to understand that applying the artistic elements is what really makes the vision or the experience that you want to create richer. It's not following some order. It's really enabling this to be richer and to enable it to grow in a wider way. That was the way I worked. And it's still the way I look at a poem and I eliminated evaluation. I just talk to the students about valuing things. Everybody got an A. Hmm. And the surprise was, as soon as I eliminated grading, they all worked harder. I never
had a
student.
Interesting.
And it really was a paradoxical fascination for me. And before, when I would give them a little critique, let's say, I recognized that what was going through their mind was my grade went down instead of, oh, I just learned something. And so as soon as I eliminated the grade, that went out of their minds, and they would say, oh, that's cool. You know, when I would make a critical comment, oh, yeah, that's cool.
Oh, that's fascinating. That's fascinating. Yeah. You know, one of my personal favorite things is those readings you do on the dock there in Saugatuck with other poets.
Oh, isn't that where poetry ought to be?
I mean, it is.
It is. Yeah. Everything about it. Tell me why you enjoy it.
Well, you know, the ambience, of course, adds something to it, but you always have this wonderful sense of humor. You're fun to listen to, Jack. It's not stuffy, you know. It's not this thing that a lot of people get intimidated by poetry.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Yeah, and you take that away. There's nothing to be intimidated about. You sit there on the dock, you feel the breeze off the water, and listen to all these wonderful poets, and it's just a good time.
Oh, I'll tell Tony, because that's a lovely thing to hear. And you know, in a couple of weeks, you mentioned this, I'm doing a workshop. It filled, boom, in a couple of days. The title of the workshop is Poetry Trauma, The Way to Recovery.
Wow.
And that just really fits what you say about the intimidation of it, you know. And I've always done, you know, the scarier part is I've always wanted to combine poetry with stand-up or comedy. And the scariest part of it is really the stand-up part, because if somebody, you don't know what happens if you read a poem, if it touches someone or not. But if you tell some silly story and they don't laugh, you know, you just bombed. So that's actually the scarier part. But I've always wanted to do that. I just see things, you know, funny. I grew up that way.
You know, that reminds me of, I talked to Lisa Lenzo. You're going to be reading with her in Michigan News Agency. And she talked a little bit about you and reading together with you and how much she's looking forward to it. And she mentioned something I didn't know. She says, oh, Jack has clowns in his family. And that's a part of that humor that you bring to your readings.
Oh, yeah, that's true. My mom was raised, she had a cousin who was like a brother. And that cousin Albert, was a circus aficionado. And I'm a little kid, and I'm hanging out with Emmett Kelly and Lou Jacobs and the Willendas. And that completely got into my blood, that whole sense of I'm not interested in being an entertainer. I'm interested in helping somebody laugh, if that makes any sense. And I always looked at it that way. In fact, I'm incredibly shy. I don't want any attention. And yet you're kind of in this place where you're kind of stuck with, I want to give it as a gift. This is, people need a laugh. Goodness. And today they certainly do. That's lovely that Lisa remembered that.
Yeah.
My mother was quite the showbiz person, and so that was reinforced in me all along. Yeah, and cousin Albert with the circus. Yeah.
So, what can we expect at the Michigan News Agency reading that you'll be doing with Lisa? A good laugh?
I hope we laugh. I do have some things. I usually just get a feel of the audience and what play off that. But I think what we can expect are Lisa's stories that are wonderfully complex and yet readily accessible. Mm-hmm. You know, you're just hunker down and listen to those stories. And then for me, I'll probably read primarily from the Goldfinch book, and then make it a bit incongruous by having some reflective poems and then say some outrageous thing about Donald Trump or something. I don't know. We'll see what happens, right? I think that's just too easy.
Hurts to laugh.
And I hope we'll remember Kahn, too. You know, there's just, Kalamazoo is a part of me, because there were so many poets there, not as opposed to in Holland, that I felt wonderful support from.
They say it's in the water.
Yeah.
All right, Jack, thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, this has been a joy. I have been completely relaxed and enjoyed the whole time with you.
Wonderful. Well, we'll see you soon at the reading. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your work. It really matters, and it matters more than ever now. So thank you.